And it's about 15 seconds after the hour. Ben Brown here. Today's Tuesday, the 9th of August. This is a Juno Afternoon. This afternoon, we're going to hear from Ralph Steves and Julie Spiegel about tours going on out at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. And Reggie Schopp will be here to talk about Juno Jazz and Classics. We have Lauren Anderson and Julie Jackson from the Treadwell Ice Arena and Pool to talk about some events there. And we also have Sandra Mander coming in, talking about a fundraising project in the Jack Lobby Shop. And Rachel Huldazar will be here to talk about her art installation at Carkeek Park in Seattle. That's all this afternoon on a Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal health officials on the Flathead Reservation have announced that Plan B one-step emergency contraception pill is now available to any female of any age. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes will provide the over-the-counter drug at several locations on the reservation without a prescription. This is in keeping with the federal policy finalized last year by the Indian Health Service, which requires all IHS facility pharmacies to make the Plan B one-step emergency contraception pill easily available to tribal members.
This is just one part of ensuring that Indian women have good health care overall.
That's Anna Whiting-Sorrell, Operations Planning and Policy Director for Tribal Health on the Flathead Reservation. Sorrell says in the past, access to emergency contraception was extremely complicated. In many cases, women were traveling to towns off the reservation to get it.
I know that Indian women are extremely resourceful and resilient, and they were figuring out ways. We shouldn't have to do that.
The pill will be available to all women, including female victims of sexual assault. Sorrell says anyone eligible for IHS benefits will receive the pill at no personal cost. Demand for the pill and the cost of providing it are still unknown. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
Recovery efforts are underway in Shiprock, New Mexico, after heavy rain caused flooding to the Navajo community last week. According to the Navajo Nation, flash floods destroyed several homes, roadways, and affected livestock. Residents hit by flooding were relocated to the Shiprock Administrative Building, where the Red Cross is assisting families. Navajo leaders have signed a declaration of emergency, ordering tribal departments to provide immediate assistance. Meanwhile, on Monday at the tribe's capital in Window Rock, Arizona, the Navajo Nation Council approved a referendum involving regionalizing local governments known as chapters on the vast reservation. The referendum would let Navajo voters decide whether or not the tribe should regionalize the 110 chapters into 24 regional governments. If approved by the president, it would likely be placed on November's ballot. Currently, the 110 chapters operate under various forms of government. Supporters of regionalizing them say it will help with transparency and accountability at the local government level. The artist working on the sculpture called Passage of Wind and Water in Rapid City, South Dakota, has begun the fourth year of his five-year project. Jim Kent has an update on the massive stone sculpture that's considered the largest privately funded public art project in the country.
It's about to be another very warm summer day in western South Dakota as I meet Masayuki Nagase at his home away from home since 2013. Nagase has four remaining stones in his art project that he'll work on this year at Rapid City's Main Street Square. Nagase refers to this section of his sculpture as the Black Hills Tapestry Garden, since the carvings on stone here reflect the cultural and scientific history of the Black Hills. Stones along the opposite section of Main Street Square are called the Badlands Tapestry Garden and focus on the cultural and scientific history of that area of South Dakota. As with his work during the previous 3 years, the Lakota culture will play a key role in the images Nagase carves.
You know, you can't really avoid the relationship with Lakota and Lakota culture if you work with the theme of Black Hills, because it is the heart of their land.
The story for the first stone Nagase is working on this year involves the history of the horse and the Lakota people. Themes for the remaining stones include the history of wagon trains and the discovery of gold in the Black Hills. Yuki Nagase's work on the Passage of Wind and Water sculpture project continues into the fall. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Since 1970, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues like treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it is 6 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 9th of August, 2016. Ben Brown here on a Juneau afternoon. And our first guests today are Ralph Steves and Julie Spiegel from the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute, which is a facility of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. So Julie and Ralph, welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben. Nice to be here.
And so there are always things happening out at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute, but there are some opportunities for people to go and experience it more personally. So tell us what opportunities present themselves at this point in the year.
So right now, I guess let me preface that by saying that NOAA Fisheries Science Center does the science behind the sustainable fisheries here in Alaska. And in Alaska, we have the most sustainable and productive fisheries on the planet. So something very special going on here. And what Ralph does, and he's been doing for several summers now, is he has tours in the afternoon to show local people and their guests the science behind the fisheries.
Excellent. And so you've been doing these for a number of years, and what's involved in these tours, Ralph?
Actually, this is our eighth summer doing these, and it's an hour-long tour where we actually go and visit the different laboratories and talk about the kinds of things they're trying to accomplish. So the biology, the chemistry, the genetic labs, the experimental lab, we actually go in there, and there's an opportunity to get our hands wet and recognize what 43-degree water feels like, and some close encounters with some invertebrates, that kind of thing. But you never know what you're going to see. Every day is something different. Yesterday we went into the necropsy lab, and there were some scientists there from the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries, which is the building right next to us, and they were doing a necropsy on a Stella sea lion trying to determine its COD, its cause of death. So it's just one of those things. People are very patient with us, and we're very careful not to get in their way, and you just don't know what they're going to be doing each day, so you have to stay fairly flexible and understand what's trying to be accomplished on a day-to-day basis.
Because the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute is a working facility with a pretty sizable staff, and the workload is kind of driven by things that happen out in the natural environment. So you don't know when a stellar sea lion is going to wash up dead and be available for a necropsy or whatever else may be driving the workload.
Absolutely, yeah. And because of that, some of the labs we do get invited in periodically. We only take people 16 years of age and older. It's not a child's event.
All right. And so what days of the week are these available, and what sort of prior arrangements need to be made if someone's interested in going on a tour?
Okay, we do these Monday through Friday, all the way through the end of September, except for holidays, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Like yesterday, I had no reservations, but the last minute, six people walked in. Sometimes that's okay. But I can only take 12, at the maximum 14, just because of the confined areas we go into. So it's worth making a phone call, making a reservation. Just leave a name and the number. And that number, by the way, is 789-6050. That's 789-6050. And just leave a message.
All right, very good. And so what sorts of visitors do you get? Are they generally Alaskans, or are they people who are here visiting Alaskans, or are they more garden variety tourists? I mean, I don't know if you have any traffic off the cruise ships or not.
Ben, that's a really good question. Thanks to Julie's expertise of surgical advertising, we never have anybody off the cruise ships. And first off, it's kind of far for them to get there. And the next thing is we're just not advertising to them. But what we're focusing on, and like I say, Julie's expertise, it's working, is local folks. And generally speaking, they have company from outside, whether it's family or friends, and they'll call, make reservations, and come out. So usually there's always a Juneau connection on each tour. But occasionally we do get independent travelers, people that are camping or traveling with the RV that are actually spending a few days here, they'll see an advertisement in the paper or something and come on out. But mostly it's local folks in their company.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously with a maximum group size of 12, maybe 14, it would be hard to squeeze groups from even the smallest of the cruise ships in.
We'd be disruptive to the work.
Mm-hmm. Right. We just don't have the capacity to take a large busload of people on a tour.
Well, luckily, there's lots of other things for those folks to do here in town.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, so this sounds like a really good opportunity, and a lot of local people know that it's out there, but they just have not made it out there. And I can say from personal experience, I was out there for Ted Stevens Day last year, I think, and got to see Mrs. Stevens when she was here. We're talking a little about that before we went on the air. And it's an amazing facility. And I haven't even done the full tour, so I haven't even seen as much of it as I probably need to do. But if people don't realize, it is state-of-the-art. Senator Stevens did a great job advocating for that facility to be built here, and hence it's being named in his honor. But I can speak from my limited experience. It really is eye-opening and pretty amazing just as a structure. And then when you learn more about the work that's being done, I think it becomes even more impressive.
Right, Ben. And in the past, I've always really been a big advocate of the wet lab, where you can put your hands in the water and touch the creatures that we have right here in Southeast Alaska. And that's a lot of fun for both adults and children. Also want to make a plug, though, for the genetics lab. Wow, that's really impressive and really some high-tech research that's going on there at the genetics lab.
And that's not taking anything away from the chemistry folks and the guys down in the biology lab, which where a lot of the rubber meets the road. You know, one of the things we're responsible for is to determine what would be suggested as a sustainable catch of various species of fish. And that work is done primarily in our biology lab. And that's when you go on a tour, primarily that's where you're going to see most of the work being done right now. There's usually a half a dozen people in there, technicians that are doing the caloric concepts of what exists in the various regions out in the ocean, so that we can determine what a sustainable catch would be, so that we don't overfish.
And that information, in turn, goes kind of higher up the chain till NIMS is ready to let it go, and then it goes to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council through the two advisory panels, and is actually used by the council members as they set policy on total allowable catch and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Right, that's great. And the whole council process is really unique in the federal government system, in that it brings all the stakeholders together at the table to make the decisions concerning the fisheries, and they take both the science and economic impact into account when they set those fishing levels.
Yep, and of course that's another area of federal law and policy where Senator Stevens had an impact. It was originally pioneered by Senator Warren Magnuson of Washington, but the act is now known as the Magnuson-Stevens Act because Senator Stevens did so much to expand upon it and improve or change some of its provisions over the course of his career in the Senate.
That's right, Ben, and we are actually celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Magnuson-Stevens Act this year, and that's a pretty big deal in fisheries communities.
Absolutely.
Am I right in thinking that Congress is actually renewing that, they're reviewing it and tweaking it a little bit as we speak?
It is definitely due to be reauthorized, so we're just waiting to see how that will go forward.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are fisheries councils for different parts of the coastal areas of our country, but the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the fisheries that it has overseas, as you said at the beginning, Julie, are so much bigger, so much better managed, so much more able to be able to provide really significant amounts of biomass for human consumption. It's kind of a whole different game in the North Pacific than anywhere else in the country, I think.
Right. This is a really interesting fact. About 60% of seafood harvested from U.S. waters comes from Alaska waters, and we really are proud of that here.
Absolutely, as well you should be. So, this is Julie Spiegel and Ralph Steves from the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. Every day through late September at 1 in the afternoon, tours are available of this facility. And you said the number was
789-6050. And after September, make a call to that same number and we can set up appointments. I just don't do it every day anymore.
Well, that's fair and reasonable. You know, you work every day all summer. You can doing it by appointment in the off season.
Well, that's actually time with them developing programs for next year. But we still want to accommodate people who wish to come out and take a look at the lab if we can at all possibly work that out.
Excellent. I was actually out there a couple of weeks ago on one of those fabulously sunny days and did the trail out to the Point Lena, the actual point. And on the way back, it occurred to me, what is going to become of the old NOAA research facility there at Auk Bay? It's sort of just mothballed. Cannery Cove, the new condos next to it. But does either of you have any idea if there's – because I assume that's still owned by the federal government and it's been decommissioned, but – nothing seems to be happening with this.
It is, but there is an effort to access it, and there are a couple organizations here in town that are possibly interested. So we are in some negotiations over that.
I was thinking of make nice condos, but that's probably not what's going to happen.
I haven't heard that that's in the works.
And they probably wouldn't be considered affordable housing if they did become condos. They would be really high-end. So, well, I just had to ask. So stay tuned, because that is that's where NOAA used to be located before moving out to the new wonderful state-of-the-art facility. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon about the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute or any other aspects of your work out there?
I would like to say that at the end of the tour, Ralph generally gives a presentation on what we call a NOAA
Science
on a Sphere. And it's this round screen and
three-dimensional globe.
Right, and it's really unique and a very interesting way to demonstrate and visualize some different scientific facts about our planet.
We focus, the program I have right now is talking about the other things that NOAA does besides fisheries as far as services to the American public, like weather forecasting service, tsunami warning service, some real interesting data there, and then some real current data on climate change, which is something that we are working very closely trying to understand how things have already changed and how we anticipate things are going to continue to change and how it affects commercial fishing.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of weather.gov. You know, if you just go to the average weather website, it's not very instructive. But if you go to that graphical forecast on the weather.gov site, you can really figure out if it's going to rain tomorrow or not pretty well. So I'm a huge fan. Well, I want to thank you, Ralph Steves, Julie Spiegel, for visiting with us today. And now's the time to go on one of these afternoon tours out at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. So don't delay and give them a call and do that. So thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ben.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see. In an octopus's garden in the shade. We would be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our heads on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be the sea in an octopus's garden with you.
It's 20 minutes after the hour. Today is Tuesday, the 9th of August. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. And Reggie Shop is here from Juno Jazz and Classics. How are you, Reggie?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Quite well, thank you. And we've got some exciting news about a concert that's coming up soon, but not so soon that you can't get tickets. The good news is there's plenty of tickets still available, isn't
there's
that right?
There's still plenty of tickets available. We have an evening of Beethoven with violinist Kurt Nakinen, violist Scott Rawls, and Juno's favorite cellist, Zool Bailey.
Mm-hmm. Zool is a rock star. Well, he's a classical star, but same thing.
Exactly. He's a rock star of the classical cello, that's for sure.
And so what is going to be on the program for this concert?
Well, actually, they are doing three of Beethoven's trios. He only did three of them, and this was really early in his beginning as a composer. This is the first time he did something where the piano wasn't part of the musical. So this is his first Dalvation, I should say, just going into it for the first time with just strings, no piano. And he wrote it for just one violinist, one violist, and one cellist. He would go on in the future to write wonderful quartets, but these are the only three trios, and he wrote them in his late 20s. So he's still experimenting with a lot of different music techniques. It's really an exciting program.
Now, as a composer, Beethoven probably had some passing familiarity with a lot of instruments, but he played the piano himself.
He played the piano himself,
and
yes,
that was probably his primary musical expression that he personally was playing.
Right. He wrote this for a baron who was a cellist. So he wrote it for him with a couple of his friends to play. So it was actually one of his first commissioned works.
And is it a piece that you particularly like?
I do. I like two of them very, very much. One of them's a little bit more melancholy. I kind of like it when he's more exuberant. But you're going to just love this trio. They're rarely played. And to get all three of them in one evening with three exceptional musicians is going to be a wonderful experience.
And this is, so tell me the names of the pieces, if you would, please.
Well, they're called Beethoven's Trio, and they're the Opus 9, and it's not on that CD.
Okay, so then I won't be playing, so there's no spoiler alert here, because I have some Bach cello suite, so this is even the same composer. This is Zool Bailey, though.
That is Zool Bailey, though.
So you're going to be able to hear a little Zool Bailey here, but not playing the Beethoven piece that
not
you're going to be able to hear.
Not playing Beethoven pieces. Like I said, they're rarely played, and it's hard to even find recordings of them.
And so where's the concert going to be?
The concert's going to be at the Jack on Sunday, September 14th at 7 o'clock. This is a benefit for the 31st Annual Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Tickets for adults are $50 and $25 for students.
And the funds raised now enable the panoply
full
of concerts next May.
Coming up next May, exactly. We have to raise funds to support everything that we do for that festival.
And if people want to get tickets, and we were discussing this a moment ago, they tend to sell out. Zool Bailey is very popular. He's very well
known.
Very
popular. Last year we sold out a week ahead of time. That's how come we're coming on air this time before we sell out, giving you a chance to purchase tickets. Tickets are available at the Jack box office, at Hearthside Books, online at jazzandclassics.org, or you can call the office at 463-3378, and we'd be glad to hook you up with some tickets.
Excellent. And you said, the prices you gave a moment ago. It's a fundraiser, so the extra funds are going to go for a very good cause, which
very good cause.
Bringing artists to town and making Jazz and Classics happen next May.
I already know some of the lineup, and I can't tell you yet. It's going to be another fantastic festival.
When will the exciting announcement of next year's 2017 Jazz and Classics be made?
It usually goes out in October.
Okay.
So we're still working on finalizing some of them, but by mid-October we should start seeing advertising about who's coming and building excitement for it.
And, of course, Jazz and Classics does a nice job of mixing crowd audience favorites that are beloved, standard and returning acts, but also trying to get new and exciting acts that have never been here before, just so it's not predictable.
Exactly, exactly. Every year, we try to do 50-50. 50% are returning favorites, and 50% are brand new. We are changing up some of the venues this next year. The Slam's going to be actually available this time to use, and it'll be a fun year for everyone.
That's an interesting point. So in the new Father Andrew P. Kashavarov Building, the APK Building. It's getting it's difficult. The new nomenclature. Well, the space, it wouldn't be the atrium. It would probably be the lecture hall.
The little performance center off to the side. It only sits 100, but it's perfect to have like a solo cellist or a duo play. And we're going to be looking at doing some small chamber music that hasn't been done here before in smaller groups.
Well, and I haven't heard anything played in there. I was there to look at the First Folio. So Shakespeare's First Folio is currently on display there. So listeners, right now, if you're interested in seeing what this new space would be like as a concert venue, go and look at the folio while Shakespeare's works are on display.
Bob Banghart did a wonderful job making sure the acoustics in there were just awesome. That's how come the walls are all the diagonal shaped little triangles, because it makes the acoustics wonderful for small string orchestras and quartets.
That's right. It's they're varying oblique surfaces, so there isn't a flat surface to reflect anything back.
Exactly. It's really, really a wonderful performance center.
Well, excellent. So one more time, Reggie, how do people get tickets for this upcoming exciting performance of three of Ludwig van Beethoven's obscure, rarely performed trios?
Again, you can get them at the Jack Box office, at Hearthside Books, online at jazzandclassics.org, or by calling the office at 463-3378. $50 for adults, $25 for students.
Excellent. Well, Reggie from Juno Jazz and Classics, thank you so very much. And I'm sure you're going to have a banner crowd at the concert. And we will look forward to having you back on the show when you're ready to announce the next May's festival sometime in October.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 9th of August, 2016. It was on this day, 1974, Richard Nixon officially resigned from the presidency, 11:35 in the morning, and Gerald Ford took the oath of office. It's the birthday of the woman who created Mary Poppins, Pamela Lyndon Travers, P.L. Travers, born Queensland, Australia, 1899, created the British nanny who appears at a household in a high wind and floats away when the wind changes. It's the birthday of Isaac Walton, Stafford, England, 1593, famous in his time as the biographer of George Herbert and John Donne and many others, and also author of a book which has remained in print for more than 350 years, The Complete Angler, or The Contemplative Man's Recreation, all about fishing, tips for fishing, anecdotes and instructions and poems and commentary about what makes fishing so special. It's the birthday of the mystery writer Jonathan Kellerman, born on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, 1949, went off to UCLA, studied child psychology, got his Ph.D. when he was just 24 years old, and wrote a medical textbook, Psychological Aspects of Childhood Cancer. But he'd been writing fiction all along, and by the time he completed his Ph.D., he'd also completed 8 unpublished novels. His first published novel, When the Bow Breaks, came out in 1985, featuring a forensic psychologist named Alex Delaware, who went on to appear in 30 more of Kellerman's books. Kellerman grew up going to Jewish day school, and he said, so much of Scripture deals unflinchingly with the worst aspects of human behavior. It's the perfect education for a crime novelist. His most recent novel is Breakdown, came out this year. And it's the birthday of the poet Philip Larkin, born Coventry, England, 1922. Father was a city treasurer, Nazi enthusiast, mother an anxious woman. Boy grew up with poor eyesight and a stammer, and he sought refuge in books. Went off to Oxford, studied literature, wanted to write fiction, came out with his first collection of poetry not until 1945, called The North Ship. Wrote 2 novels after that. Spent more than 30 years as a librarian at the University of Hull. Private man, rode a bike to work 5 days a week. Published only 4 short volumes of poetry in his lifetime, fewer than 100 pages. Never married, lived alone, was known as a curmudgeonly glum person. Never gave readings of his poems. and yet he became one of the most popular poets in Great Britain. Philip Larkin said, I think writing about unhappiness is probably the source of my popularity, if I have any. After all, most people are unhappy, don't you think? Deprivation is for me what daffodils were for Wordsworth. Here's a poem for today by Philip Larkin, Cut Grass. Cut grass lies frail, brief as the breath, moan stalks, exhale. Long, long the death it dies in the white hours of young leafed June, with chestnut flowers, with hedges, snow-like strewn, white lilac bowed. Lost lanes of Queen Anne's lace, and that high-builded cloud moving at summer's pace. Cut Grass by Philip Larkin from the Complete Poems, published by Faber and Faber and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's 31 minutes after the hour this Tuesday, the 9th of August. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown, and I am now joined by Amanda, Lauren, and Julie, who are here to talk about goings-on at the two pools in our community and at the ice arena. Ladies, welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So where to start? I mean, two pools in an ice arena, it's like a joke. I'm not going to make one, though. But what's the most exciting thing that you want to lead with?
Well, the rink just opened, so we're excited for the 2016-17 season, and we have open skating and season passes on sale right now, and come down to the rink and cool off.
And it was closed because it's closed every year for a little period of time.
Yeah, we're a seasonal facility, and we do maintenance on the facility in the summer.
And so was there a lot of maintenance that had to be done this year, or was it more or less routine?
We had some larger projects that we were working on and are excited for the upcoming season, and we're able to make a lot of accomplishments happen over the summer.
Okay, but it's done, obviously. If it's open again,
yeah,
the work should be done.
Yeah.
And so there are various times a day. It's a very, very heavily used facility. I mean, it starts early in the morning and runs till late at night.
Yep, in the height of the season there, we do. We'll open at 5:30 in the morning and close about midnight. But this time of year, we're with us just opening the month of August, we're on a limited schedule, so we're open 5 days a week instead of all seven. And so, for example, this weekend we'll be closed, but then we'll open back up on Monday. And then later in the month, we'll close on Wednesday and Thursday with the start of school, and then be open on the weekends, which is a more popular time for people to skate.
And so right now, it's mostly individuals who are out there using the rink, or does some of the team sports already get going this early?
Well, actually, we kicked off the season yesterday with Planet Hockey. It's a hockey camp, and that's for youth and adults as well. So tonight and Thursday will be an adult portion of the camp.
All right.
And it's going really well.
And so if people want to learn more about the schedule, the limited operating hour schedule, when they can go in for individual skate, or if they want to sign up for one of the hockey programs, how would they go about doing that?
You could go to www.treadwellarena.org or like us on Facebook. Give us a call at 586-0410. But really the easiest is to just Google Treadwell Arena and we'll pop up.
Excellent. And for the time being, that's going to be the capital city's only ice rink. I know that there's been some discussion over the years about building a second one out in the valley, but that's probably not going to be on the front burner in the next couple of years.
Not that I know of, yeah. Just the one in Douglas, so Treadwell Arena. We do have some free events, too, if anyone is interested in learning to skate or maybe just getting back onto the ice for the season. And those will be happening later in the month, so you'll have to check that out for us.
Outstanding. Okay. Well, Lauren, that's good information about Treadwell Ice Arena. And let's talk about water in its liquid form at the two swimming pools.
Yeah, and then we also have information about soccer and volleyball and some of our other Parks and Rec activities going on, too.
All right.
Awesome. Yeah.
So what's going on at the pools?
Well,
let's just dive right in. I'm sorry.
Oh, we keep our heads above water. we've got both pools rocking on a new schedule, school starting up, so
That means the high school teams are back in the pools, practicing in the mornings at a Diamond 5 days a week, and then the afternoons at Augustus Brown. Augustus Brown this year is actually, we started this new over the summer, is opening up an hour early to the public. So on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, we're actually open at 5:30 as opposed to 6:30 as in past years. So there's more lap swimming time available, and we're going to keep that through the school year and see how heavily utilized it gets taken on by the guests.
And that's pretty early to get up and go swimming.
I mean, it's a popular time, though. Folks are able to get in, get a half hour to an hour workout, and hit the sauna, and then get to work, you know, early and on time. So it's pretty popular time for most people.
Excellent. So that, and yeah, that, and that's 5:30, and that's 3 days a week.
At Augustus.
At Augustus Brown. Okay.
And then Diamonds open at 6 a.m. Monday through Friday, and then Saturday, Sundays we've got 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at it. Diamond, and then noon to 6 on Sundays.
And that schedule is put up every month, I think, isn't it, online?
Yeah, we've got this online calendar that we've been using over the past probably 6 months or so, and we're still making tweaks to it. I've got September through the end of September up and on there, so it should be accurate. If anyone finds anything, let me know. There's always a little bit of human error. And we do have a printed schedule, monthly schedule for both pools available at each facility for the current month, and then a few weeks out we'll have the following month up.
And I think the last time you were on, we discussed the streamlining, the simplification of the pricing scheme. Maybe you want to share with listeners a little bit about that, because now it's possible to get a pass that you can use at either of the pools and some other features.
That's right. So back in January, we went live with our new pricing schedule. We went from about 87 different price points to get into the facilities, and they were different at either facility, to the same prices at both pools. So the day fee for the adult, youth, senior are consistent between the two facilities. And you can even go in the morning for a lap swim, get a receipt, save it, and then go for your lunch workout in aqua aerobics down at the other pool if you want to. And then 10-visit monthly annual passes, those are able to use at both facilities. And if people still have a 10-visit from years past in their back pocket, mm-hmm, bring it in. We'll make sure you can use it at both facilities now, too. So we've grandfathered in pass holders who were only able to use it at one pool. They're now able to use both facilities.
And those don't ever expire?
The 10 visits do not, now.
Okay, right.
Yeah, the
right.
Monthly and annuals do, though.
Well, of course, because they're in there for a specific period of time.
And we've seen some really great turnout. We've gotten a lot of new swimmers in the pools, and pretty good revenue numbers. We're pretty stoked on everything. So.
And that level of use is obviously very important. You need people to be using it and paying as they can to use it to make sure that the resources are there to keep operating the facility.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent. Well, so that's exciting information about the pools. What else might be going on with Parks and Rec?
So Thursday we have our men's and women's volleyball sign-ups. If you are interested in signing up, we have it at 5:15 at DZ. If you don't have a team and are looking for one, please contact our office at 586-5226, and we'll put you on a wait list. And lots of managers call us and email us looking to pick up men and women for the season. On August 20th,
Sorry about that.
On August 20th, we also start our indoor soccer registration. That will be at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center from 10 to 2 on that Saturday.
And just the registration, though. The
just
soccer
the registration.
Won't be inside.
No, and that actually will start in mid-October, and the season runs through December 3rd. And that's a great 9-week program. It's open for ages 5 to 14. I'd like to get older kids, so if you're interested in playing or reffing, give me a call, and we'll talk about hiring you on as a youth referee.
All right, and that's actually a work opportunity.
Correct.
Excellent. So, and some prior experience, obviously, with the rules of the game would be helpful.
It is, and we've been working closely with Soccer Club and the Alaska Youth Soccer Association and getting people some training through the season.
All right, excellent. Well, you know, we're very fortunate to have a robust Parks and Recreation Department here in Alaska's capital city that offers such a good wide array of activities for people in the community. Anything else that springs to mind you'd like to share with our listeners?
We have a youth scholarship program. If you are interested in participating in a sport and you feel like you might not be able to make that last dollar stretch, come down and see us. We have it's $100 per fiscal year per child. So if you want to participate, give us a call and speak with Drew Baird at our front office, and he'll explain everything and hook you up.
Excellent.
And those can be even used for swim lessons at the pools as well.
And
there's lots of different options.
Yep.
Treadwell.
And at the rink.
Yeah. So there's lots of options. If you're wondering, just call us.
Excellent. And that's obviously a sort of a needs-based thing. But people,
they
have to say, you know, I really am interested in having my son or daughter do this, but it's going to be tough to stretch, and the resources are there to help them fill that gap.
And that goes for activity fees for high school. I know those are really expensive now. You can apply to have a portion of that covered up to $100.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's good information. A lot of this is on the Parks and Rec website?
Correct.
And that address would be?
Juno.org/parkrec.
Okay, very good. And that's also where you go if you want to reserve a shelter, I know from personal experience.
Yes.
Although there's no reservations left for this year probably, so you just...
There are.
Are there really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Good to know.
Give us a call.
Yeah. All right. So very good. Well, Amanda and Lauren and Julie, thank you so much for coming on a Juno Afternoon. Any final words for our listeners?
No, thank you.
All right,
thank you.
Everyone get out there and recreate. That was Zuul Bailey, as promised earlier, playing part of the Suite Number 1 in G Major by Johann Sebastian Bach. But that's not what you're going to hear if you go to the Jazz and Classics concert on the 14th of next month. So next, we now have Megan, the Executive Assistant for the Juno Arts Humanities Council, and Sandra Mander. They're here to talk about a special fundraising project that's going on in the gallery at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, the JAC. So ladies, welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And why don't you go ahead and explain what... Well, first of all, if you haven't been in the gallery shop, it has been put back together.
It has.
Since the tragic and unnecessary break-in, which happened at the beginning of the summer, and the place looks as good as new, I would say.
Yeah, we're getting really close. We're waiting on some more restock from some of our out-of-town artists, but it's getting... It looks... There's all new glass. We've got all this stuff back in. We're selling stuff. So if you need a good... gift shop, local gift shop, then you know where to find us.
And it's just so good to have that place put back together. There was a wonderful outpouring of community support and response to that senseless act. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but I understand the wheels of justice are slowly turning in the right direction.
They are, yeah. And the community has been wonderful. So a huge thank you to everyone that's donated and volunteered their time and all that jazz. Thanks.
Excellent.
So much.
So specifically, now that the place is getting back in fit shape, what is going on with this this project to benefit the United Nations Refugee Agency and Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders?
Well, it's funny because Sandy came to me and Nancy in May, and we had this all scheduled to go out on the June 1st Friday, which because of the break-in was didn't go quite as planned. But her original piece is fine, although it was benefiting the Syrian refugees. However, it's still in evidence with our police department.
It was
almost taken, but now we've got it. So we have number two here, and this one is a project benefiting Sudanese refugees. So the way the game works is come on down, take a look at the beautiful sculpture that Sandra has created, and we'll tell you a little bit more about in a second. You can make any amount of a cash check or credit card donation at the Jack front desk, and then they'll give you a little ticket, and you put it in a bin right next to the sculpture, and after a designated amount of time, we will pull a ticket. We'll let you know when we're going to do that, and someone will win the sculpture.
So the sculpture will stay here or will go wherever the lucky winner chooses to take
Correct.
It.
Correct, yeah.
And so what inspired you, Sandy, to do this on behalf of these refugee populations?
Well, I had been very moved by the desperate circumstances of these women and children. And there seemed to be a lot of support and an outpouring of sympathy for a while. But then when trouble in Cologne, where some women were sexually assaulted, I became very concerned about backlash. And I wanted to really refocus on the women and children and the fact that they were still in such desperate need and that support might be turning against them. So I just did this series of sculptures of pregnant women focusing on the fact that these women are just trying to get their children out of a war zone. And every mother has to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, every family does.
Yes.
But certainly moms have the strongest instinct.
Yeah,
now, in the
that's right.
In the
yeah.
Sudan, which is now two countries, North Sudan and South Sudan, it isn't possible for people to try to emigrate to Europe as it is in Syria. So
no.
It's a different refugee situation.
But it's equally dire because actually they don't have a place of safety to go to. The crisis there has been going on much longer than the Syrian crisis. And the spreading of the desert in Africa because of the increasing heat has caused a lot of families to lose their fields and they have no longer any way to support themselves. And during that same time, first there was the civil war where families were at risk for being killed. And then there has been tribal warfare since the civil war was resolved. And a lot of these refugees are basically, they're in these camps surrounded by barbed wire, not to keep them in, but to keep predators out.
Mm-hmm.
Because
human
there's
predators.
Human predators out. Because so they're very much at risk, and Doctors Without Borders and the UN Refugee Agency are trying to serve them in place, and you know, and the situation is still really dire. So I just felt that I needed to do something.
Right. And the refugee agency is the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, which is the
right.
formal arm of the United Nations that deals
right.
with refugee crises, has for, you know, decades and decades and decades. And then Doctors Without Borders is a volunteer group that's based up in France but is international, and physicians go and volunteer to provide medical services to highly at-risk, vulnerable populations,
yeah.
such as in the Sudan.
And also, yeah, and they're, you know, they're always the first one in and the last one out
mm-hmm.
in these terrible circumstances.
Well, unfortunately, the problems in the Sudan are not going to go away anytime soon.
No.
But how long of a window of opportunity is there for our listeners to go to the Jack and see your sculpture and contribute and just as an added benefit, have an opportunity perhaps to be the lucky winner of this piece of work?
We plan on keeping it open in the lobby shop there for throughout the fall. We'd like to get a bit of a sizable donation. We're aiming for a couple hundred dollars, I think, before we pull the plug. But right now there's only three tickets in there, so your chances are really good.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this is not any specific time frame. Anytime you want to swing by the Jack, it doesn't have to be first Friday. You could be going there for an event. there'll be someone at the front desk who could take your contribution, give you a ticket, and help you participate in this.
Exactly, yeah. Anytime we're open.
Yeah, and as soon as the other piece is released from the by the police, I'd like to use that as well.
And then that, and that, of course, is a piece that you designed for the in recognition of the people who are in need in Syria right now.
Yes.
And I just heard on the radio this morning, Aleppo, you know, is just in as bad a condition as it has been in since the trouble started. And there are 4 million people.
Yes.
Which, you know, if you live in Alaska and there's only 760,000 of us in the entirety of our state, to think of a city with no electricity and no water with that many people in a place like Syria that's cut off from the rest of it's just, it's kind of mind-boggling. So obviously the level of need there, we could all go and donate many, many times and it would be a drop in the proverbial bucket.
Right. Well, and just from Syria alone, there are 4 million refugees outside of Syria, and over 50% of those are children, and most of those children are under the age of 11.
So truly a dire humanitarian crisis as we could discuss.
Yeah.
Well, I really want to thank you, Sandy, for your work to raise awareness of both these refugee populations and to the Chino Arts and Humanities Council providing Sandy a place to show her work off, and for providing Juneau residents and visitors an opportunity to learn more about the problem and to do something to contribute to make it better.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. So go to the JAC, look at the artwork, make a contribution, and when it's time for the piece related to Syria to come back, I'm sure we will have you ladies on the show again. We can talk a little bit more about that.
We'll be back.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much.
This is Bird Note. Over a century ago, a Nebraska man named Solon Town began to collect his favorite sounds, the songs of meadowlarks. According to his daughters, he'd saunter about their farm with a tuning fork in his hand, listening, then hurry back to his desk to transcribe the songs into musical notes. And to help him remember the songs, he added words. One meadowlark, Town believed, warned farmers, "Hoopla, potato bug." Another was concerned about the eggs in its well-hidden nest. "Be careful, you'll break 'em." One just seemed tired of all that vocalizing, singing just as usual, while another sang his meadowlark heart out to his mate. "You're a lovely creature." For a long time, one song eluded Town, though, until he discovered that a baker in Omaha by the name of Jay Burns was giving away a picture postcard of a bird with every loaf of bread. Suddenly, he had it. Town told everyone he knew that the mystery song, from a meadowlark, translated into English as "Buy Your Bread from Jay Burns." For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
And that was Goodbye to Ireland by Caitlin Warblow, who's performing tonight at 7 p.m. at Rockwell. Tickets are still available at the Jack for maybe like five more minutes.
Oh, no, I'll be there until 6 o'clock tonight.
All right, and then if not, you can get them at the door.
I'll probably go offline about 5, and then I'll get them all up there, but you can buy tickets at the door over there.
That sounds good. So the person I'm asking these questions of is Rachel Hutzler, and she's here not to talk about this concert. She is here to talk about...
Oh, I'm talking about an outdoor chandelier that I just hung up
in a park in Seattle. It's kind of exciting.
Yes, and I actually had you on the microphone there. So if it sounded like she was in a box, I did not have Rachel in a box. I had her on the wrong mic. Now, so Carkeek Park is a well-known park that has a lot of outside public art.
Yes, in Seattle. It's actually, I don't think I have the address, but it's about 110th. It's right north Seattle. It's right on Puget Sound. It's I think it's about 88 acres mm-hmm. plus. And they basically, yearly, they've been doing this Heaven and Earth. It's an outdoor art exhibit that's been going on. It's a temporary outdoor work where they have an artist map and different pieces all strewn throughout the park.
And if people go there, how do they find your piece of art?
My piece is actually placed really, really well because once you drive down, there's a big U kind of a loop that you go through, and you'll be able to see it on the left when you go in, and you'll be able to see it on the right when you go out.
Are there pictures of it on your website?
There is pictures on my website. There are pictures on my website. There's also pictures at the Carkeek Park website. My website, my personal website, is not my name. It is actually Ratchet Constructs. It was a business name I picked up quite so many years ago. And that is RATCHET, and then Constructs is CONSTRUCTS.
Excellent.
Or you can also look up my name, which is also very, very difficult to spell.
Spell
which
it.
Is Rachel Hutzler. Its first name is spelled R-A-C-H-A-E-L, and then my last name is J-U-Z-E-L-E-R.
Excellent. Rachel Hutzler?
Hutzler. Very good. You're getting there.
Absolutely. Well, so make a special trip to Seattle to go to Carkeek Park, or
yeah,
if you're there for other
there.
Reasons. Yep. Excellent. You know, a fun bit of Carkeek Park trivia, that's where Jeff Herman and Sarah Wiesenthal got married.
Oh, very nice. It's a gorgeous place. I mean, it really, really is. And basically, the chandelier, I put it into this exhibition just a while back. They never quite got back to me until the last minute, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, we do want it. It ended up being the chandelier that has been traveling around, was in the juried show, the All-Alaska Biennial, went all around Alaska. Then I got it back, and I refired it, so it's really thick now, and it can totally withstand outdoor weather, which is where a lot of my chandeliers are going to right now.
Excellent.
So, outdoor chandeliers.
Okay, well, Rachel Hutzler, congratulations on that successful installation, and go see it in Carkeek Park in Seattle.
And it will be there until September 25th.
That sounds like a plan. All right, thanks so much for coming on Juneau
Thank
Afternoon.
Thank you.
The Rotary Club of Juneau is proud to present the 5th Annual Capital Brew Fest coming September 17th at the Jack from 1 to 5 p.m. Even more brewers from across Alaska this year, as well as great local music and food. Proceeds benefit the humanitarian works of Rotary and Juneau Stop Heroin Start Talking. Come and drink beer for a cause. Tickets are limited and this event will sell out, so buy yours at capbrewfest.com.
Broadcast support comes from Icy Strait Lodge, located at 435 Airport Road in Hoonah, providing lodging, auto and boat rentals, a restaurant and bar, and more. Information at 907-945-3636.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait.